God, what a game that was.
Yeah. Are we podcasting?
Yeah, let's just call this a podcast. That was an introduction.
Hey, guys. How's it going? You can't respond to me because you're in the past and this is a one-way line. Worst home opener ever that you've been to? How many have you been to?
I've been to three that I can recall. One was 2000, which I can't remember if we won a lot, won or not. I think we won. I don't know. I don't remember it being bad.
Well, let's put it this way. It would be hard to have a worse home opener just in terms of lack of interest. I mean, so like, the person who threw out the ceremonial first pitch in Oakland for their home opener was like basketball players from the St. Mary's team, which I guess did something.
So, yeah, they won a game.
Cool. If you took their ceremonial opener if you took their VIPs and replaced Randy Johnson and all of the old Mariners with them yesterday, that would have been the worst home opener ever. Meanwhile, the Padres apparently had the best home opener ever because they scored more runs than they did in 2009.
Right. I don't know. I think having Johnson and all the old Mariners there just kind of afterwards underscored how awful the actual game was.
That was a crowd that was ready to celebrate.
Yeah, no, it's in a way, because you love this, that was kind of our 2010 season in a nutshell. It started off so well, i.e. the first game of the year,
uh-huh.
And then everything after that has just been, ugh.
Yeah, we have a season in a nutshell now after eight games, or nine, because you're listening on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Unless the game is rained out. God, I'm getting tired of this conditional stuff.
It's been twice.
I know, and it's annoying.
That was fast.
We should have a plan. Let's see. It's Brett Anderson against Doug Fister. So realistically, there's going to be more panic by the time people listen to this than there is now when we're talking.
Can it really get to be more panic?
Yes, because you can. I don't think the degree of panic will get worse from individual people, but you will get more people panicking. So the average
level
of panic.
Yeah,
because I mean, neither of us are ready to panic. But I mean, what if we end up 4-12 instead of 2-6? You know,
yeah.
What if we do this again? That's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. I guess in my mind, I can't see myself panicking. It's more of a slow degradation into acceptance and despair.
Maybe that's fair, because you know who should be panicking is the players and the people with the team. We're not affiliated.
Right.
Nothing to panic over.
It's also just because I don't take short samples and small samples and allow them to affect my mood that much.
Mm-hmm.
If I did, I'd be schizophrenic about when it comes to baseball, at least. And so it's more just, I don't know, I would panic over Felix getting hurt.
Right.
You know, that's the sort of thing that it has to have this monumental impact and occur in a short time. It's not like the Mariners' playoff odds can go from 25% to zero
mm-hmm.
in a short time. It's going to take the entire month of them sucking
mm-hmm.
In order to reach that kind of, you know, asymptote of that they're not coming back from this.
Wow.
Unless, wow, what?
Word.
yeah.
I think you used it properly.
Yeah. I was going for just the limit thing, and I was like trying to reach back to 11th grade calculus, and I was like, asymptote. I think that's the word. Anyways, it's just
trough.
You know, it's going to be just this. Each day brings us, you know, just a little bit closer. I don't think mm-hmm. there's never going to be a breaking point, as you wrote in your right. post. There's not going to be one day where it's like, oh, okay, officially panic time now.
Mm-hmm.
No, okay, now if like Felix goes down or Ichiro goes down or Gutierrez decides to take up male modeling and quit baseball,
the quit baseball thing, he's already...
Yeah, quit baseball, you're right. That's a panic.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mariners continuing to suck is just more of a, oh, God, no. No.
Maybe it's hard to panic about something we've already been through so many times. Like, it just, like you said, it's just the slow degradation into acceptance, like...
Right.
If you get cancer the first time, like, oh, man, really? I have cancer? But then it comes back, and you're like, well, you know, I knew the risks going in. So,
yeah.
you win, you lose.
Now apply that metaphor into the model of you having had cancer your entire life.
Attention, Mr. Sullivan, you still have cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything to fix it. Oh, experimental treatment. We get it.
Right.
Experimental treatment is bald.
It's it's the Mariners. It's like, I don't know. We're obviously really upbeat.
Well, Matthew's sick, and I just spent a lot of time driving to a home opener that was literally eventless after the opening pitch. Like, there was even some douchebag standing in front of me when Casey Kostman made his one good defensive play, so I have no recollection of anything worthwhile except, like, a neat double play when we were already losing, I think.
Yeah. Combination of driving and light rail. I've been on the road for like 8 hours or something in the last 36 hours, and I'm sick. So, woo!
Podcast.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
Some of you fuckers are looking forward to this one too.
I don't know why. Really, the only reason I'm thinking about, or I decided to go through with this, is that in the hopes that, well, since we've gone one and I don't know. A lot since our last 1-6. I already forgot our team's record. Since we've gone 1-6 since the last time we did one of these, maybe now we'll go 6-1.
Yeah, or we'll go 1-6.
Oh, that would be the worst. Then we'd have to stop podcasts altogether and see what happened.
No, because then we have something to prove.
It's not us. It's not correlation or cause.
I don't know what it is. I wonder if I would feel, or if we would feel, a lot worse if the Angels weren't also 2-6, because while another team struggling shouldn't necessarily make you feel better, especially when the A's are 6-2 and, you know, the Rangers are playing pretty good baseball, like, just the fact that the Angels are doing just as bad, if not worse, since they've played 7 games at home,
right,
just makes me feel like either the Angels can do it so we can do it, or, well, if we lose, at least the Angels are losing, because fuck them. I don't know
what
it is, but it's...
I certainly have no goodwill towards any of the other teams in the AL West, but it's pretty clear to me that the Angels are, if I had to rank them in ordinal order, the Angels would certainly become my most hated team. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly root for the A's just because they're like us or because of Billy Beane or anything. I hate the A's too, but yeah, like you said, there's something, I guess, less irritating about... I guess that's just what it is. If the Angels were 6-2 and the A's were like 2-6 and the Rangers 4-3, like, oh God, not again. Not the Angels again. At least when people come around to mock us about being, I guess, too overly optimistic about the Mariners, and they're, at least we could point to be like, well, see, we were right about the Angels. Finally.
Except we weren't. At least, well, whatever, it's been 8 games, but yeah, just... Not having to deal with, maybe, you know, A's fans aren't going to talk trash if they win the division, because who would?
They have fans.
That's the thing. It would be like, I don't know. I don't know who would talk trash. Maybe like Kurt Suzuki would call all of our home phones and be like, hi, this is Kurt Suzuki for the Oakland Athletics. I would just like to remind you that my team is in the playoffs. Yours is not. In part due to me. I'm polite.
This is weird. I don't understand this.
I like watching the A's, but I think that's because they don't have Jack Cust anymore. Like, they're an interesting team now. Which is weird, because I find us so god-awful boring.
I don't understand. Our team was supposed to be exciting, and like, I was supposed to enjoy pretty much everybody who pitched. And
well, here's the thing. There is no such thing as a fun loss. I mean, maybe like one, but if your team is 2-6, its loss is going to be bad. So it's just, it's so hard to be a fan at this point, because when you only have 8 games, you know intuitively those 8 games don't mean much. It's only 8 games, but it's all you can remember. You don't want to apply memories from last year to this year. So you just think, how can this team be so bad or boring? Because we haven't seen it. But then think back to opening day. Like, we were running like crazy motherfuckers, and it worked, and it was fun when the A's were throwing the ball all over the infield because of us. Like, that was a week ago.
Right, and it's also because we won.
Yeah, and we won a game. But
and since then, we've scored 16 runs in 7 games.
You know what? There are teams who have done less. We'll talk about one later in the podcast. I'll use my best Kurt Suzuki voice. Sneak
there is only one
Astros.
Team. Yeah. They're so bad.
So bad. And, okay, you know what? We're doing the Astros now because I want to, because yeah. I was looking at them earlier and I don't want to forget about this, even though it's on our little checklist. Not only are the Astros currently 0-7, maybe 0-8 or 0-1-7 or whatever, you know, by the time this goes up, the Astros are still going to be bad, that if regardless of how they play on Tuesday. But, first of
they
all...
They might have lost three games by then.
J.R. Poles, by the way, is 1-16 so far this year. Which means nothing, but when you put it together with what J.R. Tolles did last year, you think, oh no, not again. And then you look at their bullpen. Here are the Astros relievers. Do you know who Sammy Gervasio is?
No.
Okay, well, he was a... Unfortunately, he was the fun Astro pitcher who had like a weird windup, but he threw hard. He had a tailing fat. He was like Juan Cruz, kind of, like that kind of
right.
stuff. And so in his second game, he got hurt, and he's, like, out for a while.
So, yeah, I'm noticing he's throwing the least amount of pitches, or least amount of innings.
So you're looking at this window, too. But for the listeners out there, here is the Astros bullpen, as best as I can tell. Chris Sampson, Tim Burdick, Jeff Fulcino, Brandon Lyon, Brian Moeller, Wilton Lopez, and Matt Lindstrom. Not only is it bad, it's a bad bullpen, but it's a bad bullpen of, like, oh, no. These are our relievers. Like, we're handing over a one-run lead in the ninth. Who are we going to give it to? Jeff Fulcino or Tim Burdick? Burdick has 5 appearances so far in 7 games. So does Sampson. Who the fuck is Tim Burdick? Like, is he a specialist? He has... even if he is, I don't know him, which means I'm familiar with lefty specialists because there's only a handful of them. So if I don't know a lefty specialist, I should probably verify if he's a lefty specialist before I rant about this. He's a lefty specialist. If I don't know who you are as a lefty specialist, you're probably some team's third lefty specialist. Like the backup to Mike Myers' backup. Is Mike Myers still pitching?
I don't know.
What's important is Astros minus Lance Berkman equals bad.
Astros, yeah, you know, I just said that we've seen the Mariners score 16 runs in their last 7 games. Well, the Astros, at the time that we record this, have only played 7 games total, and they've scored a grand total of 13 runs. Just looking at this, based on their WOBA, in 7 games, their hitters have amassed negative 19 runs against average.
Oh, hey, the Astros don't play today.
Tuesday, oh, well.
Yesterday. The Astros don't play yesterday, listeners. And today, Matthew. So, right, good news. So. They're going to remain the 223 batting team with the fewest walks in the National League and a bunch of strikeouts because they're terrible because they have 50 strikeouts and 6 walks. This is a Major League Baseball team, everybody.
They're so bad.
Wow. Oh, God. Like, if you know going into a year, they're going to be bad. And there were no questions about the Astros. Like, nobody thought, oh, Cinderella. No, these aren't your daddy's Astros. Craig Biggio is not walking. Craig Biggio is not hit by pitch through that door. Like, the Astros are not going to be saved. But the most you can hope for if you're a fan of a bad team is, like, the Blue Jays are 5-2 right now. They're leading the AL East. Like, yay, we have a month where we're relevant. Like, then you get something to celebrate. But the Astros, like, already, and they missed Strasburg by 2 years. They missed Bryce Harper by a year. Like, who's going to pick next year? Does Jeff Fulcino have a kid?
I have no idea. I don't know anything about the draft. So,
like, the Mariners, even in 2008, we were at the knife game in Cleveland with my recap. We finished that day 13-14, and we were close. So we had a month in 2008, where we were like, yes! And the Astros got opening day pregame.
Right, yeah. And they've been doing it at home, too. They lost all those games at home.
Wow. George Bush was there. Not the, well, this is politics, but his dad, the first George Bush, was in attendance. I was watching some of the Astros game because that's what I was doing in my life. And he was there with Barbara Bush, and he was rooting on the Astros. I almost felt bad, like, oh, he's going to be dead. Win a game for him. They've already been shut out 3 times.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so, you know, we may live in a glass house, but somebody else lives in a worse glass house.
Somebody lives underneath the glass outhouse in the hole.
So we're throwing stones at
the glass.
We're throwing stones at that guy.
Yeah, so
take
the
Astros.
Like, the Pirates are 3-4, and there's nobody worth naming on their team, but they're looking down like, Can you believe these guys?
I'll stick with the run score thing. I was poking around some various statistics today and looking for some good, I don't know, some sort of beacon of brightness that I could bring to the Mariners' run score totals.
I couldn't.
I found some interesting. I mean, there's some interesting things just looking at Baseball Reference. Like the team so far is averaging about 4 pitches per plate appearance, which is good. It's up from 3.7 last year to literally it was like 3.99 so far this year. They're swinging a lot less pitches. Obviously, they're making contact at about the same rate. So like a lot of the stuff is decent. And I looked at like their line drive rate according to Fangraphs is about middle of the pack,
right?
But their batting average, their ball in play batting average is fourth worst. So that would kind of say like, oh, see, you know, they are the patient team that we thought they were going to be. They're going to draw some walks. Their line drive rate's fine. Obviously, they're getting hit with, you know, bad luck on ball and play average. And I was all ready to kind of write that up and be like, see, we probably should have scored this many runs. And then I was like, oh, well, I kind of want an actual number. So I'll compute base runs through 8 games and find out how many runs base run says we should have scored. And then I can apply it and be like, see, our offense isn't as bad. And I did the total up and base run says we should have scored 21 runs. So our offense has been just as bad as it has been.
It's because of those errors we benefited. We didn't deserve a lot of the runs scored.
Yeah, the errors, the wild pitches.
Basically, I mean, we have 3 home runs right now through 8 games.
We have 3 home runs,
which is bad. One of them is Rob Johnson, too. It's like it doesn't even count. And the Casey Cosman home run was a garbage time home run for whatever that's worth. Like, we've drawn a fine number of walks, but that's it. I mean, we've struck out, no power, no nothing. I can't even remember what a line drive looks like off of Mariners' bat.
Even though we're about middle of the pack, apparently.
Well, that's the thing. I saw that statistic this morning, too, because I was doing the same thing as you. I was looking for, like, how can I make this team look better? But our offense has been shit, and our pitching staff has a terrible strikeout-to-walk ratio.
Yeah, okay. That's the big thing. I think that everybody's focusing on the offense, and legitimately, the offense has been bad. But, man, the pitching staff's been bad, too, and that's why we're 2-6.
Yeah.
If the pitching staff had was living up to where it's supposed to be, we'd probably only be like, I don't know, 4-4.
You know who's been good? Jesus Colomé.
Yeah, actually the bullpen has been good. That's the thing, like we expected the offense to be bad, but not this bad. We expected them to be like, you know, stealing a lot and they're not. They're running a lot, but they're running in outs. And we expected the rotation to be pretty solid. And the bullpen to be hopefully good, but it was kind of like a who knows. But Brandon League's been awful. And the bullpen, the rotation outside of Felix has been bad. And even Felix, it's hard to say on Felix because those 6 walks in the opener were total BS walks for the most part. And that's really dragging him down because, hey, he's thrown 2 starts and we shouldn't draw conclusions.
And Ian Snell, his 2 starts. And I was all ready to write. I was going to write a post about Ian Snell, like, oh, he's in trouble now, but then somebody died, and it's like, well, I feel bad.
Yeah, like, and his first start wasn't awful.
No, so Dave was all about, like, oh, Snell didn't look good, but the A's just couldn't hit. And I wasn't sure. It's impossible to separate between the two. I thought, you know what, as long as he has twice as many strikeouts as walks, that's fine.
Yeah, and then, the other thing is that the A's are hitting.
Yeah.
They have a 346 team wOBA.
That's one thing, like, when you're looking at the numbers right now, you have to consider, we've played 2 teams so far, and it's going to remain true as you listen to this podcast. We will be in our 9th game, we will have finished our 9th game against Texas and Oakland, so we're clearly biased. It's far too early to read anything into these numbers, but Milton Bradley's walking, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, we could win this next game that will happen later tonight, and assuming we won the game last night, we're, you know, 4-6. And hey, 4-6, yeah, it's not where we want it to be, but that's not awful. It does kind of suck that it's 4-6 against our division rivals. Alternatively, we could win tonight and be back at 3-7. And
or we could lose them both. Go into the Thursday off day, our first off day, at 2-8. And then we rush Lee back, and we rush Bedard back, and everybody gets hurt, and then Adrian Beltre comes back and gets injured for some reason. And it's like, oh, no, how is Miguel Cairo here again? This is all a joke.
I know. It's just, yeah. It wouldn't have been, it'd be one thing if, I don't know, never mind. I don't want to go down that road. It's too negative.
Let's not
negative. Just, let's move on to something else.
There could be negativity in their future.
Yeah. You know, it's, they are what they are. They're 8 games, 9 games. They're in the past. The team's not going to be this bad forever.
You know, if the Mariners are bad and the A's win the division, then I think I mentioned before, but at least that's proof. Hey, the model works. It's just we got unlucky, they got lucky. Looking at the Mariners schedule right now, so I won't try to predict what they do against Oakland tomorrow or today and yesterday or today. It's, well, you know, against the Oakland, God, this is weird. Then they have the off day. And let's say, I don't know, they're 3-7 in the off day, whatever. Then they have Detroit and Baltimore for 6 at home, Friday through Wednesday. And those are going to be big games, boring games, but big games, because after that they head off on the road. And remember, we have an easy April. Like, this was supposed to be our soft landing. And granted, we're not at full health, but we need to make something out of this. Like,
right.
The Mariners are 2-6 now, but they need to shape up. Like, they can't go a game under 500 or something through the end of the month. They need to turn it around now, because it's not going to get easier than it is now. And as much as we want to count on Lee and Bedard coming back, offense, hey, we get Detroit, then Baltimore, then Chicago, then Kansas City. Okay, that's pretty easy. Like
is pretty easy.
Those are 4 teams that are not going to make the playoffs. After that, then, as we go into May, then there's Texas, there's Tampa Bay, and there's the Angels. Or, like, it, I don't know, what is that, 9 games? That's going to be hard. And it, we don't have to go team by team, it all evens out, but the team needs a turnaround. I mean, they have 2 weeks now where they need to show up. And if they haven't shown up by the end of the month, then we're really in trouble. Not that I want to go that far, because it's the middle of the month. But I didn't want to be in this position. So it's not panic, it's concern.
Right.
I am disappointed as a parent.
I am, I'm disappointed, and I'm frustrated with Wakamatsu and or Zarenzik. I don't know who's responsible, and I'm not going to place the blame on one or the other, but the problem with having Mike Sweeney on the team is that it really is forcing Bradley into left field full-time, and I know they kind of wanted to do that, but Milton Bradley has, you know, a lot of leg injuries in the past. He's had surgery on both knees. He missed a lot of time with day-to-day injuries last year, all of them leg-related. And left field and Safeco Field is huge. It's a lot of ground to cover. And Milton Bradley, somebody who seems like he tries really hard, and he puts a lot of pressure on himself. So I feel like it's kind of tempting him into overexerting himself, giving him this much field to try and cover. And he's going to hurt himself. It's just – it's a statistical likelihood. And – while I, you know, that's fine if we had a Vladimir Guerrero on the team, but we don't. Like, we're putting Milton Bradley at risk in order to have Mike Sweeney and Ken Griffey Jr. platoon at DH. This is stupid.
I'm going to interject right here with just one quick quote that I don't know if you saw it from earlier today. And we kind of talked about this at the game yesterday. That's private information. Nobody else can hear that. But this is from an article in the PI by Art Deal? Yeah, that sounds right. Mike Sweeney, quote, "The atmosphere is the same as last year, it's just that the results are different." So, granted, again, 8 games, this proves nothing, but it's like, hey, where's the chemistry? Why isn't it helping? The team gets along, they can't hit, and they can't pitch. And so and please do not interpret this as me saying chemistry doesn't matter, or that it's not relevant, or it doesn't work, or that it's failing us, because that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that you would think that one of the benefits of great chemistry is that teams, you know, don't slump like this, or maybe they come out of the gate better, or generally they just don't look like shit for 8 games.
Yeah, you would hope that would be a side benefit of good chemistry.
Like, designated hitter's role is supposed to be filled by hitters. Designated hitters. They're just designated there to hit. Our designated hitters are there to be good people, which is...
Yeah, and we have 2 of them.
And they can't hit.
Right. The punchline of this was that I looked at, you know, what would... If we move Bradley to DH, in this case, I in the most optimistic case, because of Sean projections, say we call up Michael Saunders, not Ryan Langerhans, put a Burns-Saunders platoon in left field. This would necessitate cutting Sweeney. You use Bradley as your full-time DH, give him a couple days off once in a while against right-handed starters, and put Griffey at DH to both rest Milton and give Griffey whatever. He does probably still has some use left. I don't think Sweeney, Griffey, one or the other, whatever. But the point is, the end result to me looked like you're gaining 1.5 to 2 wins.
Mm-hmm.
Or to put it the other way around, the current arrangement is costing us about 2 projected wins. And while I wasn't that irritated by it during spring training, I was pretty irritated, but I wasn't apocalyptic about it because, I don't know, the games weren't mattering yet. Now that we're 2-6 and 4 games back, really getting tired of seeing Milton Bradley out there in left field and a DH that can't hit, mm-hmm. and you know, Mike Sweeney on the bench. We run into situations where it's like we face a left-handed starting pitcher. You know, that would be the ideal time to have like Eric Burns in left and Milton Bradley at DH. That was the idea before the whole Mike Sweeney thing, you know, stuck on the roster. The problem, we cannot do that right now, because if we did, our 4-man bench would consist of Griffey, can't play anything, Sweeney, can't play anything, our backup catcher, and Tuiasa Sopo. So if we face a left-handed starting pitcher, we kind of have not. Well, we have to put Milton Bradley out in left field, because otherwise Matt Tuiasa Sopo is our only bench player that can play any position except catcher. And it's Matt Tuiasa Sopo.
And for the record, he is our emergency catcher, so maybe he can play every position.
Right.
He's
our backup at every position, because we have to carry Sweeney and Griffey and a backup catcher and 7 men in the bullpen. Mike Sweeney, you know, he may not be going up there and failing a lot. He certainly is when he's gotten the chance so far, but he's costing this. You know, we had this winter all about flexibility and how much flexibility we're going to bring to it. The one move of keeping Mike Sweeney on this team has basically negated all the flexibility on this team. We now have none.
Well, it's a joint thing where it's Sweeney, and also, you know, having Lee out means we have to go to the 7-man bullpen, which takes away a Langerhans. But
yeah,
the fact that they were unlikely to stick with the 6-man bullpen all season anyway means that they could have seen this coming. And that's when Sweeney becomes the real problem. And I thought I did a fine job like a week or two ago establishing that little Mike Sweeney hot streak that people love to talk about from last year wasn't for real. Like, it's a bad argument. Everybody knows it's a bad argument. It's not a terrible... He's not a terrible hitter, but he's not a good enough hitter to justify the way he's being treated. Right. And I don't want to rant too much, because I'm in a negative place with the team on account of the record, so I don't want to say things I can't take back. But Mike Sweeney...
You can take everything.
We can take everything back, and I mean, I don't know how many people are still listening to this anyway. You guys are dedicated. But chemistry is all well and good. You can talk about it and go into the year and you can be like, well, you know, we're going to keep them, but it won't make that much of a difference. You know, maybe it'll work. Maybe the chemistry helps. But as soon as the games start, you want results. And if Mike Sweeney and Ken Griffey Jr. don't start producing results, then things could turn ugly, at least for Sweeney. I get the sense things may never turn ugly for Jr. here, but we have a team icon. We don't need another team's.
Yeah.
He's not ours. Give them back.
The other thing is
Kila Kaiwe. Him. Nice.
Yeah. The other thing is, even if you bought that his second half season was meaningful, mm-hmm. it wouldn't matter, because he still can't offer any defensive coverage. So even if all that would make him as good of a hitter as Milton Bradley, there's still no point. He's still an active hindrance on the team because we have Junior and because he can't play defense. There's no point to carrying Mike Sweeney, or no quantifiable point mm-hmm. in favor of carrying Mike Sweeney. and it's costing this team runs, and it's costing this team wins.
I will try my hardest. I mean, I figure, as we know as well as anybody, this team doesn't make decisions on the fly. They have a reason for everything they do, and this bothers me now, but I'm going to give them a little grace period. I'm going to give them like a month, and then if this is still an issue in the beginning of May or the middle of May, like if one of Griffey or Sweeney hasn't gone away somehow, you know, just DL'd or whatever, or gracefully walked away like Patrick Kearney,
right?
Football reference. Then I will start to get really mad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not like the team can take Griffey and Sweeney on the roster and then just sit them or get rid of one immediately. Obviously, if they take them, they're going to have to use them at some point. If they keep it up, that's bad, I think, unless they perform. God, I don't know how that's going to happen. But, I don't know. I mean, there's enough reason to believe that this team could look way different in the second half than it does in the first half that I'm going to try to give them the benefit of the doubt and just say, I don't like it now, and I hope it changes.
Fair enough.
But I think you know as well as I do, neither of us were a fan of the whole Sweeney thing. And
no.
I continue to... He must be one hell of a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I could speculate, but that's not appropriate.
No.
But we can try to go to something a little bit more positive, and that's dovetailing nicely with one of the podcasts that we did during spring training when I went through and we talked about how the infield defense projected to look pretty decent. We're 8 games in, and hey, the infield defense looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Lucky for us, that's one thing that through 8 games has actually produced at a level we thought it might, rather than tanking like so many oil tankers
Earlier today, I had it going through my head that I was going to do something similar to what you did like a week and 2 weeks ago, your like positive post. Like, hey, reasons to be happy. Then I was like, all right, let's see. We got the infield defense and
Goody.
And Goody. Yeah, Goody was the other one. I mean, it's we can't... Yeah, so the infield defense has looked sharp.
Yeah, aside from catching.
Aside from catching, because 3 catchers interference from the one who we like in one weekend, and then, you know, the whole Rob Johnson deal where, oh, yeah, can't catch the baseball. He's a catcher. But if you look around the infield, Jose Lopez over at third, there obviously there were concerns. He's made some mistakes, but realistically, and I'll ask for your confirmation, but to me, he seems like he's looked about as good as anybody reasonably could have hoped so far.
Yeah, I would actually say he's looked better at third than I remember him looking at second base.
Yeah, he's made some running plays, some off-balance throws. He's looked almost, I'm hesitant to say this, but he's almost looked graceful sometimes.
Yeah, or it's more that he hasn't been able to demonstrate a lack of grace, that he had more opportunities to at second base because he had more ground to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been pleasantly surprised with how he's looked at third base.
Yeah. And I mean, Wilson, I can't recall Wilson really messing up. I think he had one error, but whatever errors happen.
He's had two. I don't know if they were both called errors, but one was there that botched double play in the opening day grounder. And then there was a ball that went through the infield, I want to say 2 days ago, I think our last away game, that he was slid to cut down on the infield and it went under his glove. It didn't matter, I don't think. It didn't cost anything, and it was going to be a base hit no matter what, but it was, I guess, you know, it was a mistake.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's been, you know, the Jack Wilson that we expected him to be.
Yeah, and I mean, there were concerns of how Figgins would handle the double play and whether he would have good chemistry with Wilson, but that, I mean, that's off the table now. They get along. Like yesterday, or in the home opener, they made a flashy double play work together, just a flip, and we've seen that a couple times where Figgins just looks all kinds of comfortable, and I mean, he's shown range on grounders and pop-ups that you know Lopez wouldn't have.
Right.
I don't want to say that he's made a catch so far that Lopez wouldn't have made, but he's flashed superior ability. Like, it's clear he's there because of his range. His range is good. He's made a difference. And Kochman, you talk about a guy who's almost like lucky that the team has been so bad out of the gate, because he, even though he hasn't hit real well, he's been one of our better players.
Yeah, he has.
I mean, in the field, like, if ever there was going to be a first baseman to convince people that first baseman can play defense and it matters, it's Casey Kotman. Like, he seems to make a really good play every day or two.
Yeah, it's he's been good even with the bat. It's not been too bad. The double plays are going to probably irritate us as the season wears on, but hopefully there's enough other offense to kind of mitigate that. But yeah. I will say, yeah, so we kind of have harped on the Mike Sweeney thing and the Milton Bradley, and we've kind of harped on a couple things with this team. So I will say bravo for the Figgins and Lopez switch, guys. That was, I don't think anybody really floated that idea until we kind of heard rumblings about it from the team might do it, and it's turned out way better than I think we would have expected it to, and about as good as it possibly could have.
Yeah, this is so far through 8 games or 9 games. But this, I mean, if it looks good,
right?
Now,
no, but
for...
not based. We're not. Yeah, we're not basing this off like a 9-game sample of UZR. We're just basing this on how they look with our eyes. So, you know, all caveats apply.
Yeah, naturally, but this is just kind of a scouting little thing. So,
yeah, yeah.
Not a huge
I mean,
deal.
Hoschman is just—he's impressed. I mean, I know what good defense looks like, but it's—I don't really know what good first base defense looks like. At least I don't have images in my head, but it is exactly what you think. It's just like diving stops on line drives and picking throws, like bad throws, or making catches in the air and turning around and tagging somebody. Like, Kotman has done it all. He is nimble over there for a big guy who can't run. I at this point, you know, I just want to see that home run swing a couple more times because I like him so far. But, again, maybe that's just because I don't like anybody else.
Yeah, I do like him. I don't like him in the third spot in the lineup. I really don't like him in the third spot of the lineup. Even against right-handers, I don't like... I get the point of like stacking the lefties, but I don't like how our typical lineup has gone. You know, Ichiro, Figgins, Kotchman, Bradley, Griffey, or Griffey Bradley, or whatever. I don't like having the five lefties all at the top and then four righties. To me, it seems pretty clear that Franklin Gutierrez should be in the three hole every day.
Yeah,
he looks good there. He's a good hitter for the team. I know the three spots, mathematically, not one of the more important spots, but in terms of like the lefty righty breakdown, and he is still going to get enough plate appearances with runners on base, especially with Ichiro and Figgins. That's two possible, you know, 400 on base percentages ahead of him. We're not going to be the typical team up top. We're going to be top heavy with our lineup. So, you know, and once Bradley. Ideally, it should be Ichiro, Figgins, Gutierrez at three, Bradley playing DH, hitting fourth. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe Lopez five or something like that, and Kotchman batting sixth or something to kind of keep that lefty-righty balance going. And yeah. But if he starts putting the ball in the air a lot more often, then I'm a little less concerned about his role in the three spot. But
yeah, we'll see about those fly balls, but it's hard to stomach. He's too reminiscent of Jose Vidro for me to want him in the third spot.
Yeah. I think. Offensively, at least.
Yeah. He's Jose Vidro plus a skill.
Right. And, you know, much more pleasant to look at and didn't come in the result of a crippling trade.
I love the revisionist history that people have with that. Like, oh, Snelling never did anything and Fruto never did anything. Yeah, well, Vidro never did anything except make the team worse.
No, the whole even at the time of the trade, aside from like the emotional attachment to Snelling, it was never that I thought Snelling was going to be good. I know he's new; he's way too just broken to ever really amount to anything by that point. And I don't care about the loss of Fruto, and didn't at the time. But it was really just it was very analogous to what Mike Sweeney represents now. It's just that it was locking up the team's DH spot. And it was preventing the team from being flexible there. And hey, lo and behold, we're doing it again. We're just doing it with somebody who's, you know, not as easily vilified.
Yeah, and also just maybe even more difficult to get rid of because there's that emotional attachment now that nobody ever had with Vidro. Even Pepe didn't have an emotional attachment to Vidro. Yeah, the twin.
Right.
That didn't work. Oh, by the way, this is completely unrelated, but I'm going through Yahoo box scores. I'm looking at the Rays Orioles game. This is the Rays eighth inning. Strikeout, then single to shallow center, single to shallow left, single to shallow left, single to shallow left. Those are the runs, or that's the inning so far. The Rays have the bases loaded. Felix Pea is playing left, in case you were curious, for Baltimore. Sounds like it could be one hell of an inning that Tampa Bay is putting together. That's the Royals special right there.
Yeah, that's the inning that we're supposed to be having.
Oh, Brian Matuzes. Brian Matuzes is pitching. He's off the strikeouts. Interesting. All right, Baltimore. I would love for Baltimore and, I mean, Baltimore and Toronto are both decent teams. You know, they're not walkovers like, you know, the Angels. So it would be, that would be great if they could just get the Lightning in a bottle, make it like a five-team race for a couple months in there.
Well, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I had some animosity toward Baltimore, so.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when push comes to shove, you're going to hate anybody in the league because you're going to have some negative recollection of something that happened.
I pretty much do hate everybody in the league except for the Twins and the Rays.
I don't hate the Twins either, but I'm getting tired of the Rays because of the bandwagon that, you know, we started.
Yeah.
The thing that annoys me about the Twins is whenever I watch them, I get like Bert Blyleven, and I think, God, I liked you so much more before I heard you talk and say things out loud to me.
That's true.
And then, you know, if they make the playoffs, everyone's going to be like, oh, they're just the scrappy little team that does everything right, even though it's like, oh, well, they're powered by
Joe Morneau.
That'd be a better name. Joe Mauerin.
Some sort of crazy Minnesota Canadian hybrid.
Joe Morneau. but, you know, the Twins, just the coverage that they get is so annoying. It's like, oh, they're the anti Moneyball because they don't use stats. They're just all scouting. See, I'm annoyed now by the anticipation of what people would say about the Twins they are good. So, yeah, basically, if you go through the annals of your brain's memory and you really sit down and think about every team in baseball, there will be something that's there that makes you dislike them. Like, Matthew, Rockies. What do you think about the Rockies?
I like the Rockies. You picked one of the few teams I have, like, no. Also, it doesn't help that it's the National League, but I'm sure there are some people that got tired of their kind of miracle run in 07, but to me, that was like kind of like the meme thing or just like the joke thing where it was like, you know, it starts out, it was kind of funny, like, oh, the Rockies making this late season push, whatever, doesn't matter. And then it kept going, and then people kept talking about it, and then people started bringing in the God thing. And it was like, oh, this is such a dead meme. But then it kept going, and they won, you know, freaking 30 games in a row or something like that, and then it got funny again. It got incredible. It's like, no, this is beyond Hollywood now. This is amazing. I want it to keep going. And then they got swept.
Oh, we have an update. After the Rays strike out in four consecutive shallow singles, they get a pop out. Everything shallow in this inning. Nothing leaving, nothing going 200 feet.
Yeah.
But okay, how about the Blue Jays?
Boy, that's a really inoffensive team. But I will say, one of the first World Series I ever remember watching was the Blue Jays Phillies in 92. Mm-hmm. And I remember rooting for the Phillies because I liked their uniform better. And I kind of don't like that Joe Carter gets so much, you know, praise for being one of the worst 40 home run, 100 RBI hitters.
Let's see. Jays because of Joe Carter.
See, I'm reaching there because you've picked like two teams that really have no much animosity. Yeah. Like, how do you really hate the Blue Jays? Like, what I really have against the Blue Jays is they're from Toronto. Mm-hmm. Okay, there.
Yeah, well, that's a perfectly fine reason. That's my reason.
Yeah.
And then it's like everybody goes to Seattle and invades when the Blue Jays play. Like, you're from Vancouver. Like, you are closer to like every other team in baseball.
Yeah.
It's just the damn border.
Yeah, I hate the Blue Jays for having fans that are also Maple Leafs fans, but then it doesn't work as well because they also, every Canadian's like, oh, I got to root for the Blue Jays. Like, no, you're not. You're 4,000 miles away from them.
I mean, the reason I hate the Indians is because of 1995.
I hate the Indians.
Oh, here we go. Evan Longoria singled a shallow left, two run score, tie game. Awesome. Nice.
I hate the Indians because of 95, because of the game in 2001, because of the Arthur Rhodes thing, because of a couple incidents with Let's Go Tribe that was really irritating. Like, that's what it's more like for me for every other American League team. There's like four or five reasons that I really dislike that team.
Yeah.
The Twins, I really have none. Mm-hmm. And the Rays, there's just kind of the bandwagon thing. Mm-hmm. But I still like a lot of their players, and they don't really have fans, so.
I wonder if the key to liking more teams is just insulating yourself from knowing anything about the people who support them or talk about them. Like, if you just watch a team and like don't look at the crowd or anything, don't read any blogs, maybe it'll be easier to like the Dodgers, for example.
Yeah, well, I would probably like the Red Sox in that case. I mean, my entire hatred of the Red Sox comes from Red Sox fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dustin Pedroia is a funny little motherfucker.
So
I hate him, but
yeah, I hate the coverage and the hype that he gets. But if I wasn't aware of the coverage and the hype, and I wasn't aware of the Red Sox bandwagon nation to separate it from actual Red Sox nation, but yeah, I probably wouldn't have any issue with the Red Sox. I used to kind of like the Red Sox, like back in the 80s and the 90s. My family's from New England, so I mean, my entire family is really like Red Sox fans, except for a couple people who are more towards New York, but yeah, I don't know.
My sweet old grandma is a Red Sox fan, so is her sister. She's from outside of Boston. They're so nice, and when the Red Sox won the World Series, I was so happy for them, and I was like, fuck you, grandma! Why do you get to be happier than me? Things are weird when I go to visit now, but it is... I read too much, I guess. There are reasons to hate everybody. Like, there are reasons for me to hate the Mariners right now. Lots of reasons.
Oh, yeah. There are
sometimes I do. It's and, you know, it's maybe it's not fair to, like, dislike teams because of their fans, because there's assholes everywhere that follow
yeah.
every team.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's clearly asshole Mariner fans. There's people that are going to Seattle and booing Milton Bradley already. You guys are assholes.
Yeah, there's people going to Seattle and cheering for Ken Griffey Jr. You guys are assholes. Root for the team.
So, yeah, it's... But, you know, if you... We apply so much rationality to understanding baseball and everything. Like, there are times... There are a lot of times where it's just nice to have pure, subjective, no good reason hate.
Yep.
If I don't want to apply my, you know, logic to everything when it comes to sports, otherwise that kind of inevitably leads to the conclusion of, why the hell do I care? This is sports.
Yeah, no, I've been there. But I want the hate. I love the hate. I love feeling the hate, especially in like hockey games against Buffalo or whatever. But I feel like maybe in baseball I need to direct that hate for reasons other than the fan bases. Because it's not enough. Like if I see a team lose... In devastating fashion, there will be people that I'm glad are upset and people that I'm like, oh, like that's some kid's first baseball game of his life. I don't want him to be sad. And there's like 1,000 of those at every baseball game. There's like Make-A-Wish kids like, oh, oh, like 4 cancers. I don't want, come on. Like, what, can't everybody be happy? Like, I want to be able to pick the people to be happy. Like, I want the Angels fan base to be made up exclusively of like,
the people we think the Angels fan base is made
people
of.
Who, like, keep kidnapping and murdering teenagers in San Diego. Like, I want a team to literally be like, this is the prison team. Like, this is the team that people in prison root for. And not, like, people in prison for wrong crimes. People in prison for, like, raping their dad. Like, in reverse. Like, it's just so hard. Like, when I watched the Cubs lose to the Marlins that year, the Steve Barbin year, like, I was...
Yeah.
I thought it was funny, and I was like, you know, there's, like, 110-year-old people who
yeah.
just want the Cubs in the series. Like, I have nothing against them. They can't even express them. Carlos Peña, infield single, 4-3 Rays. What an inning, by the way. Like, it's so... I don't like feeling things for other people.
Empathy is the worst.
Empathy, yeah, you know.
There's pills you can take to get rid of that.
Yeah, but they get rid of creativity, too. Like, I wanted to take those brain pills that enhance your memory and focus and stuff, but then I just become, like, a mathematician. Like, that's not the life I want to lead. That's not... I like being creative, and I don't care if it's sometimes it makes me crazier. Like, I hear the mailman when there's no mail. Like, whatever.
So acid, then, is what you're looking for.
Yeah, I want to start acid. Start acid. Start dropping acid. Yeah, anyway, the point of that whole rant was hate a team. Maybe hate them for a better reason than the fans. And then that also kind of carries over to media coverage. Like, I'm so tired of the East Coast bias thing. For one, those are the most popular teams. For two, their games are reasonably timed. Like, in New England, Mariners games aren't over till 1 in the morning. They're not
right.
going to pay that much attention to us. Also, we're bad. but we don't need to go into that.
No. That's... Yeah, it's approaching actual game time for that game in the past.
I wonder how Doug Fister has already done against this line. God, the A's lineup is almost... So the thing about the Mariners and the A's lineups is, like, the Mariners have some guys who are really good hitters and some guys who aren't. Like, Rob Johnson sucks. Jack Wilson sucks. The A's, though, are just, like, balanced. Like, any hitter in there is exactly as good as any other hitter. Yeah. So it looks better to me because I like the balance, even though I don't know if it is better.
When they all look the same, too, they're just all... talk about a boring team from an outsider's perspective, because you can't even keep them straight.
No,
it's like, oh, here's this guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm so glad they got rid of Aaron Cunningham because he was like him and Pennington in the same lineup just fucking threw me off.
They still had Hanahan then too, so it was like Pennington,
yeah,
Hanahan, Cunningham, Sweeney.
Classic, Jane Austen names in there. And,
this is like a 1915 team.
They can get Blake Hawksworth from the Cardinals, just throw in the all royalty team, and then there's Drew Stoneburner or whoever from the Rangers. Yeah. Post idea, awesome. All right, I'm gonna have the Jane Austen baseball team.
I hope Eli Whiteside's catching.
What?
I hope Eli Whiteside's catching.
No, that's gonna be the Wild Wild West baseball team.
All right. Well, you're going to have to draw that up and then we'll have to compare which team would be better.
Point. I'm thinking it's going to be the Jane Nelson team because I actually have more than one player for that team. Eli Whiteside is one guy and bad. So look for this post. Maybe in the past. It could already be on the site. If it is, I hope you wrecked it. Meantime, I have to post an open thread for this game. And so I think we're going to call it quits now. If there were any weird little blips, it's because we lost the call twice during this podcast. We apologize, and Matthew will edit it to the best of his ability. Please don't complain. It's free. If you complain, you guys are fucking assholes. If you don't like podcasts, don't let us know. Don't listen. Don't listen to the podcast. That's fine. If you don't like them, shut the fuck up. We don't care. You had your chance. No, I'm going to ban you.
Have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Peace.